Okay, welcome to another edition of Just Mets Live. I'm your host, Rich McLeod, joined here by Michael Barron. It is Thursday, July 31st, 9 p.m. We are coming to you after the trade deadline has officially passed. There are no more deals left to make. Mets make one final move on Thursday, acquiring Cedric Mullins from the Baltimore Orioles. They do not trade for a starting pitcher. They do not get another bat. We'll get through all of that shortly. We want to make this an interactive space as always. So if you want to speak and ask us a question or just make a comment about the trade deadline overall, hit the big microphone button, request to speak. We'll get to everybody who requests while we're on. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm glad it's over. That's for sure.
A lot of work.
The 2 to 3 days that lead up to it are always, you know, you got to sit and watch, you got to listen, you got to talk to people, which, you know, both of us have been doing, and, you know, try and provide as much context as we can. And, you know, always, you know, every year when the deadline passes, I always feel like you can take a deep breath and feel like you can get it like a few days off, even though there's no real days off, but it feels like you get days off after things like this. So, it's the same with the winter meetings. Like when it's over, you're like, okay, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, you know? So,
a little behind the curtain for everybody, you know, when this stuff's going on, obviously we want to be as fast as possible to, you know, be able to get our thoughts out there, be able to share some statistics, some insights that maybe other people can, at least so fast. So sometimes that involves like doing a lot of work beforehand and being like, okay, who could the guys be trading? You know, sometimes if we're really feeling ambitious, you know, like writing a couple things ahead of time just to be ready. And then, of course, like 90% of those articles never see the light of day. So to be going from kind of being on such high alert, especially these last 24, 48 hours, even for us, it's just like a nice little bit of a break. You know, it's super fun. It's exhilarating and the adrenaline's up. But, you know, you can't operate like that forever. So I'm glad to have a little bit of a rest. And now we can kind of, you know, sit back and recap and evaluate where we're at. Because, you know, for better or worse, other than, you know, some farm system guys coming up, this is the team.
Yeah. And I think overall, like, it's hard to really complain about what they did. I mean, I know everybody wanted, including me, you know, I'm not going to exclude myself from that. I wanted them to get a starting pitcher, but, you know, I mean, look at the way the market played out. There were no big every starting pitcher I thought they should get didn't get moved. So, and I think David Stearns alluded to that tonight. So, I mean, I guess you can't be that upset that they didn't get a starting pitcher, or better, I get maybe phrase that a little bit differently. They didn't overpay and do something stupid for a starting pitcher, right? Because clearly those prices were really high for even people like Sandy Alcantara, who's having a miserable first year back from Tommy John, but people wanted to buy into, you know, the upside that comes with him, and, you know, next year really, and the years of control, and Edward Cabrera the same. And the prices were probably just so high where teams were just, you know, they did other things. Like the Yankees were the same way, where they just went and, you know, stacked their bullpen. They did the same thing the Mets did, the same thing the Phillies did, the same thing a lot of the contenders did, because that's where the games are going to be won and lost in October anyway. So, and, you know, in retrospect, and this may be me just trying to take comfort in them not getting a starting pitcher, they need to get to October with the starting pitching they have. But then they have the three or four guys, and that doesn't include Clay Holmes, if I had to wager, you know, who are going to pitch in those short series. They're here and they're fine. I'm not worried about them. They just got to get there, right? So, you know, maybe that's me just trying, you know, insanely, you know, rationalizing, you know, not getting a starting pitcher. But, you know, that I think that's really the truth too. Like they built their bullpen for October, and now they just need to find a way to get to October with the five or six starters. And David Stearns talked about possibly even using McLean and Sproat, which I think is a little crazy, but, you know, maybe they get used in some capacity. It's got to happen, right? They're going to need to do it.
They're going to have to. And, you know, teams have done it before. It's not insane. You know, it's a gamble. You don't know how it's going to pan out and how these guys are going to do under the bright lights for the first time. But, you know, I was earlier tonight listening to the live edition of the Mets Pod, which is hosted by Joe DiMeo and Connor Rogers over on SNY. And they had brought up a point, which I think is, it's always a good one. It's something that I even need to remind myself of. If a guy that you wanted didn't actually get traded, you are not allowed to be mad that the Mets did not trade for that guy because they weren't really available. Or if they were, it was completely absurd. So, you know, you can nitpick and a couple guys. And look, I wanted them to get another bat. You wanted them to get another starter. You know, they did get
I wanted them to get a different bat than they got. But I think, you know, whatever.
But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, your favorite, Luis Robert, the White Sox, for whatever reason, put their line in the sand. And I think somewhere out there, it even said that they wanted Jonah Tong.
Luis
Robert, which is like completely fucking absurd. And like, you wonder why these teams are so poorly run and why they stay so bad. You know, the Pirates held on to a lot of guys that, you know, if you want to wait on Mitch Keller for a little while because he's under control, like, I get that. You don't trade Dennis Santana. You don't trade Tommy Pham. Like, what the hell are these teams doing?
I was going to say the Pirates are like everybody's just minor league feeder system at this. Well, they're not minor league; they're major league feeder system at this point. Like they're just every year they're destined to trade everybody to every contender. But of course, they didn't trade Mitch Keller.
They don't trade
because he's under control. But I mean, there's no point in keeping him because they're going to end up trading him anyway because they're not going to be good in next year or the year after. So,
yeah, and it's just. It doesn't make sense. They never make sense. You know, like, again, if you wanted to wait till the offseason for Keller, because, like, maybe you get a little bit more, I guess I get it. But, you know, the Santanas and the Fams and, like, these guys that are older and having really good years and you're not even going to have a round to trade. Like, why are you holding on to these guys? It doesn't make, any sense. And then you have, like, on the flip side, the Braves didn't fucking trade anybody and they're 17 games under 500. Yeah. Like, some of those teams,
the Pirates specifically, like, look, they've been to the postseason once or twice since 1992 or 1993. Mm-hmm. Like, they've had mostly losing seasons in those third. Like, so you don't really have to look too. These are the Pirates. This is how they're organized. This is how they're run. Rob Manfred continues to defend them to the hilt. But the results are always the same. So, fortunately, like, I don't have to worry about the Pirates unless, you know, I want the Mets to get a player from that team. So,
yeah, or unless the Mets are trying to beat them, which apparently they cannot do.
Yeah, they can't beat. They can never beat the Pirates,
especially in Pittsburgh. But I'll try to keep us back on the train tracks here.
We're talking about the Pirates.
Yeah, we're talking about the goddamn Pirates after the trade deadline. But you know. Aside from a couple of guys, you know, like we were saying, most of these guys that we wanted for the Mets that were maybe rumored, you know, they're still on the teams that they were on starting the day, which means like there wasn't a ton of different things they could have done. Like, honestly, I know the numbers are a little bit more in favor of like Harrison Bader, but like I think I'm probably a little bit more happy with Mullins than Bader. And maybe it's just because we've already seen him, or I think this is probably the best his performance gets, where he might have a dip and Mullins might have like a little bit of a better second half. He has been hitting better recently. And the defensive metrics on him are very weird because defensive run saves thinks he's one of the worst center fielders who's ever lived, but outs above average has him in the positive. So it's a bit of a weird analytical thing. I think Stearns even alluded to that like, not all of his intangibles show up in the box score and the metrics have like differing opinions on him.
Mention a leg injury that he was dealing with too. So maybe that has something to do with it as well. So we'll see. That's all we can, you know, we'll see. Right.
Yeah, we will see. But let's get into it since we're talking about Mullins. I want to, you know, try to keep us at least somewhat focused. So that's the one move that the Mets make today. We'll kind of recap everything as a whole as we go through, but they do trade for center fielder Cedric Mullins today, the lefty from the Orioles. They don't give up much to do it, so you can't be mad at the return. I think the only ranked prospect was their 30th ranked prospect, Ramon Gomez. You also trade pitchers Anthony Nunez and Chandler Marsh. So I know in the moment it was a little bit of like, okay, like I guess like, you know, it's all right. We kind of hope for more. But now that the trade deadline has passed, now that we have seen that these outfielders and offensive players didn't really go off the board, how do you feel about the Mullins addition now with that context?
I mean, you know, I think I put it out there today, like if you're in the camp of like something's better than nothing, then, you know, Mullins is definitely an upgrade over what they had, right? Because they only had, they were only getting a 602 OPS out of center field. And Mullins, he was, you know, you can argue is like his league average, essentially, right? His league average player overall. He has a 738 OPS. So you can expect more offense out of the position at this point, which is what the Mets need. I don't even know that the Mets got him necessarily for what he does defensively. I think whatever he does defensively is gravy. Like they needed to get more production out of the position. You know, I think it creates more questions on the roster, you know, as far as what they do with some of the younger players, what McNeil's going to do. Is he going to be a super utility? Or is he going to move him back to second? And then if they do that, what do they do with Beatty, Mauricio, Acuna, and Bientos? But, you know, he definitely makes them better, right? And, you know, there, I'm sure, you know, and Stearns talked about, you know, the off the field stuff and, you know, just his, he almost referred to his coachability, which they said that they liked, you know, a lot. So, you know, and, you know, he's a veteran and, you know, he has speed, you know, he runs the base as well. He should make them better. If better is getting league average production out of the position, then fine. I mean, because right now they're getting nothing. So that immediately makes them better, even if it's not extraordinary. Right.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with it. And in the podcast a couple of weeks ago, when we were talking to Jake Brown, we kind of talked about this same idea of like, you know, maybe there is an Cespedes trade out there. And as we learned, there really wasn't anything close to that. You know, aside from that, what the Mets really needed to do in some of these offensive spots was raise the floor, because they were getting such below average offensive production in a lot of these spots, right? For a while, catcher, third base, center field. Those are the three main spots. You know, with catcher now, you're hoping that's a natural solution with how much better Alvarez has looked in a short stint since coming back from the minors. You're hoping, can we get a 740 OPS out of Alvarez for the rest of the year? And Torrens does like whatever the hell he does as a backup. Third base is not going to change. Clearly, it's going to be this mishmash of these two to three different guys, which we'll get to that in a minute. And again, they've raised that offensive level by committee a little bit, where they're probably a little bit more respectable than they were for a while. So I kind of left center field as the main hole, unless you wanted to look at DH, which they didn't. And like as great as a defender as Tyrone Taylor is, which he is fantastic, his offense was just like so painfully,
was a major harmfully
league. Bad at times. Right. It's like, that was the very clear, like, man, if we could get league average offense out of this, that's a massive improvement. And that's what the Mets did.
Yeah. And it's, league average production from the position is going to seem so refreshing assuming he comes here and does that. It's just going to seem very refreshing, and it's going to lengthen the lineup. Again, maybe not extraordinarily so, but you know, league average will seem extraordinary considering what they were getting out of that position. So, and it's no knock on Tyrone Taylor, and he got off to a good start. I think he just got a little bit overexposed with his usage, and that's, you know, it was the same thing with Luis Torrens. You know, no one's knocking what these guys bring to the table, you know, and they love him. It's just, you know, they're not every day. You can't have them out there every day. And
they're part-time saw that, players.
Yeah. And that's, we knew that. Like, so this isn't really a surprise with the way they've produced over larger sample sizes. Right. Mm-hmm. So, they just, I, you know, by Memorial Day, it was clear. Like these were identified as areas to upgrade. You know, I mean, they can't upgrade every position. They can't get 20 new players. You know, so, but you know, I think they did what they could under the circumstances, given the tools they had in the shed, i.e., who was available. Mm-hmm. And I think they did. I'd rather they got Mullins over Luis Robert. That's for sure. I think they made, you know, thankfully that I don't want to say thankfully that I think it worked out perfectly for them as well as it could have for them. Put it that way.
Yeah, and I mean for you at least, that's not even factoring in the return that you would have had to give up. You just really don't like Robert, but well, I get it because
no, I mean I just don't think I think they're better. I don't think they. It's not that I don't like them. You know, he could come here and hit 30 home runs over the next 2 months, and then I'm just dead wrong. But, you know, I just don't think on paper, like, bringing him in at any cost, like, even if they're saying, like, give us a bag of balls for him, I just don't think that makes him better, right? And I do think Mullins makes them better. I mean, you know, because he's a league average player, right? So,
yeah, he's more reliable.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert really would have been a dart throw for sure. Moving on, we kind of started to touch on it a little bit, but how surprised are you, if at all, that the quartet of Acuna, Vientos, Beatty, and Mauricio, they're all still here? There were no trades out of that surplus by the deadline that will carry this conversation again in the offseason, I'm sure. But are you surprised that all four of them are still here?
No. I'm sure they were getting hits on Vientos. I'm sure there were hits on Mauricio, but specifically Mauricio, like, I don't think there's any reason to move him. You know, I don't think I used the term yesterday. I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze in this trade market to move, you know, some of those younger players. I think they, right now they have more value. And certainly Mauricio right now, you know, those guys have more value to the Mets than they do to other teams. And certainly have more value to the Mets by keeping, you know, in keeping them than, you know, trading them for league average rentals. I mean, you know, Beatty's been about league average. So if league average players are available, you know, you're just trading an apple for an apple at that point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Beatty is cheaper than anyone else. He's been fine defensively, I guess. And, you know, I think he's definitely a better hitter than he has been over the last couple of years. So, like, why bother moving him? And Mauricio is just, you know, he's got all these tools that, you know, where you feel, you look at him and you're like, wow, this kid can be a star. I don't know how long it's going to take for that to happen or not. You know, so like, I don't think they were really motivated to move him. You know, I think there may be some more motivation to move someone like Vientos or Acuna potentially. But again, yeah. Like, for what, right? Like, it was an unremarkable trade deadline, you know, when you look back at it. So, you don't want to move your, especially guys that you've invested in, and let's be honest, like even Acuna, who, you know, may or may not pan out long term, they have a boatload of money invested in him just by the amount they ate, you know, to get Max Scherzer out of town. So I don't think that you want to be, I don't think you should be so quick to on the trigger to get rid of those guys. I think you need to be a little bit more patient, which is partially why I'm surprised actually that they moved Gilbert, you know, as fast as they did. I mean, that's not to say he's going to come here and be an impact player. Like, who knows, right? But it was the same situation as Acuna, where they had so much money invested in getting Verlander out of town to get Gilbert, right? You know, I was a little bit surprised by that more than I'm surprised that they kept those other guys.
Yeah, but again, you know, you have to remember with these prospects, you know, yeah, Cohen spent the money, but, you know, David Stearns was not acquiring those players. Those were all Billy Epler guys, and we're at the point where I think Stearns has opinions about these guys. Some of them he likes, some of them he doesn't, and I think when you look at the outfielder depth chart for the minor leagues, you know, you could make a clear argument that Gilbert was third or fourth on that list with the prospects. When you have Clifford, who's the other guy from the Verlander trade, he's kind of like a corner infielder, corner outfielder type guy. So who knows where he's going to wind up at the end of the day. But, you know, behind Clifford, Jett Williams, who's been in center field a lot. And, you know, obviously if he's staying on this team, he's not going to be a shortstop with Lindor locked up. And then Carson Benji, Clearly they didn't really see a role for Gilbert here. And like, you got to give to get. And I wasn't
right.
Maybe I was initially surprised again, because it's more of the thing of, oh, I actually know who these people are. So it seems like a lot for that reason. But, we talked about it yesterday. I didn't have many qualms with that. And
right. It's a path to the big leagues thing for all of them, really, and, like you said, you value other prospects at that position or people you think will eventually play that position, then the prospect becomes expendable this time of year. This is when you trade prospects in large measure, unless there's an exception in the winter, with the big prospects. Like, that's what these deals usually are for sellers. So I was just, I thought about that transaction. Remember how much money, the Mets swallowed in that mm-hmm. deal. But like, it is what it is. I mean, thankfully, it's not my money, so I don't have to worry about it. But
yeah, for Steve Cohen, it's like a fart in the wind, So I don't think he's particularly concerned at the end of the day.
Meanwhile, when I find a dime on the ground, I feel like I won the lottery. So.
But you bring up a lot of good points, and I think Acuña and Vientos specifically, depending on how the rest of the year goes, at least, I think these are conversations we'll come back to in the off season for sure. For now, I think it's a really interesting puzzle that they have to solve of playing time for these guys. I think Acuña, just judging with the state of the roster and everything, I would have to think he's going down to AAA before the roster gets updated for Friday's game. Because they didn't give up anybody from the major league roster other than Buto, which won't impact him. And they added a center fielder. I don't think they're just going to cut Tyrone Taylor. So the only real logical option would be Acuña goes back to the minor leagues. And even then, though, you've got Mauricio, Acuña, Vientos, and Jeff McNeil, who will not be playing center field now, vying for two different spots on any given night. So I think that's really going to be interesting. But we do have a couple of callers queued up, so I'm going to – let's bring up our first guest.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd make kind of two points. One – I feel like at a certain point, and I guess this is somewhat of a question, like, are they not doing a disservice to specifically Beatty and Mauricio by kind of having them in this flux? Because, like, okay, you can kind of squint out and see how, Vientos can maybe platoon at, DH or something. And, I get Mauricio playing against, right-handed pitchers. But what is really, with McNeil moving to second, what is Beatty's role at this point? And how are they going to necessarily thrive when you have, Beatty and Mauricio basically kind of serving very similar functions and not being able to get that consistent play time? And really what I think I would have liked to see is just one of those guys in some kind of package for, whether it be Merrill or it have been Laureano, just someone that could have helped this roster just a little bit more. Plus, kind of gotten some of that congestion out. And I guess I'm just curious, and I'll hear your opinion on those points.
It's a good question. And I think Stearns talked a little bit about that today, when he said, I don't know that I necessarily agreed with him, but I did and I didn't. When he said, it's very unusual for younger players on a good team, as he put it. And I'm assuming he's referring to the Mets when he says a good team. Get 650 plate appearances and play one position the entire year. He said, that's oftentimes these days it's, spread out, with other players. And I think that's him addressing that question, so to speak. And I agree and I disagree. I agree when in this situation where none of those players, Vientos, Acuña, Beatty, and Mauricio, have stood out and sort of taken control of the position or their roster spot, if you will. But also, to his point, it's hard to really do that. It's hard to get someone or afford someone an opportunity to stand out when you have four of the same kinds of players on the team and you're trying to, you know, keep them all fresh and sharp and, you know, they play every other day or every 3 days. Like, it's impossible to really know, like, what you've got in a player unless you see them over a long period of time. And, you know, I think, you know, and I agree, like, you know, that, you know, it would have been easier to trade one or two of them away for, you know, the player that they needed for to fill the issue, to fill the, to solve another problem. But it's like I said before, I think these players have more value to the Mets than they do to other organizations right now. I mean, they're all pretty one-dimensional. You know, they all, you know, like Mauricio is, you know, a hitter. He's got a strong arm. But Vientos is a hitter and has a strong arm. Vientos has a probably better baseball IQ right now than Mauricio. And Acuna is fast and he's a good defender, but he doesn't hit very much. And Beatty is just a general mystery. Like, then this is why I say, like, they probably don't have a whole lot
of value. If you could just smush them all together.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a five-tool player. But right. I think the best point that you made is the whole thing of, like, yeah, it'd be great. It would have been great if the Mets could have used an Acuna or one of these other guys to get the player that they really needed. But that would require another team valuing one of these players in that way. And clearly they didn't.
Right.
Because I think the Mets would have made that move if that was out there. If they could have traded an Acuna or a Vientos and some middle prospects like the ones that they've already moved, and have gotten an ace or a number two, number three starter, or maybe a better hitter, I think they would have done that. So I think the fact that they didn't tells you, like, where these guys' value are. And I know it's frustrating. And I did think that one of them was probably going to get moved just from the numbers game, but the Mets aren't going to dump them for nothing. Right. Again, we're probably going to come back to this conversation in the offseason. I have a hard time believing all four of them are going to be coming back next year. There's only so many spots, but, you know, for now their value was not high enough to move them. And, you know, the other thing too is, you know, competition's not the worst thing in the world, right? You know,
I think it's helped Vientos and Beatty specifically. I think that internal competition.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you've seen it from both of them at different points last year and this year. They've kind of been like stealing the job from each other back and forth. And obviously neither of them has been good enough to hold on to it for the long term, at least not yet. But you kind of have to wonder if the Mets have gotten a little bit more out of those guys because they've been competing with each other and they're not so complacent. And I don't hate that at all, you know, especially right now where DH, third base, second base for most of these guys, Vientos can't play second, but otherwise, most of these guys are kind of competing for the same two to three spots on any given night. And I think that's only going to make them better. And I think it's going to tell the Mets brass a lot about the makeup of these guys. And they can make decisions later on in the winter about which ones belong here, which ones should get moved, and what can we get back for them.
Totally. I agree.
Awesome. Let's get Alexander up here.
Okay. What stands out in my mind? All right. Well, actually, what everybody's thinking about is how we did at the trade deadline. It's obvious we did excellently. Sure. I mean, Stearns surpassed, you know, many people's expectations. He was patient. He waited to the right time, and he got what he could. He filled a lot of holes, gave up very little to nothing for filling in the holes. So he upgraded us. But the other thing that stands out in my mind is that I think that they are mishandling. Maybe there's a reason that nobody knows except them, Acuna. Acuna, on this very deep team that has a lot of capabilities all around, a nice mix of veterans and young guys. But Acuna stands out. To me, it's an unpopular opinion, but it is I'm sticking to my convictions here. Acuna is the best of them all. I think the Mets are mishandling Acuna. They really ought to stop wasting time with this kid and start giving him his time so that he can show his stuff. This kid has a lot of tools that, in my opinion, equate to excellent. votes. That's my opinion.
What makes you say that? Why do you believe he is better than the three other people he's competing with on the roster right now? Just out of curiosity.
What makes me say that? Yeah. Well, let me quote somebody who's a little more qualified than me. Lindor himself, earlier in the year, when there was, you know, I mean, it's a season-long thing, including preseason, before the season started, about the overloaded people that we had all around the positions, right? And when asked directly in an interview about Acuña, Lindor said he has superstar capability potential. Superstar. All right. When Lindor says something like that, it's not to be minimized as its substance, with its substance. You know, Lindor is a very, very seasoned and instinctive guy that's very cerebral. So I give a lot of weight when you hear players like that comment. And that's not something that people usually will be ballsy enough, you know, very forthcoming about. You know, they might steer away from they might try to deflect a question like that. But he was asked about Acuña, all right? And, you know, that's what he said. He said he has superstar potential.
Well, I mean, I think...
Need I say more? Need I say more?
No, I mean, I think he has a lot of... I think he has, you know, he has the four tools. I think he has yet to show it, and I don't know how much he showed it in the minor leagues. And that's really, you know, Alex, like, that's really what it's all about, right? I mean, you know, all of these players are really talented, right? They're the best in the world. You know, I always say, you know, anyone on Twitter who calls a major league player trash, you know, should really think again, because the worst major league player is 1,000 times better than the best amateur player, right? So my point is that they're all talented, and Acuña unquestionably has, you know, has skill sets which are, you know, hard to teach. You know, he's fast. You know, he's a smart player. He's got a fast bat. He's got fast hands. He's a great defensive player too. He can be a great defensive player, but he has to put it all together. And it's not to say that he's gotten a string of playing time this year to prove, you know, what he's capable of doing. Because I agree. I mean, I've said all year, you know, if they're going to keep any one of these guys in the major leagues, and this includes Beatty, like, I would keep Acuña, because at the very least, you know, you can use him, you know, as a late game defensive replacement or as a pinch runner or something like that. And I think that has a lot of value to a team like this. And that's really what it ultimately is. It's always about that, that word value. Like, what value do these guys bring? Like, they may be good, like Vientos may be good, or Beatty may have all this potential, but what value is he bringing right now? And I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just wanted to hear your reasoning. With all due respect to Francisco Lindor, like, I would never expect him to say a bad thing about a teammate in public. But, you know, I don't disagree with, and I remember when he said that, like, and I don't disagree with that opinion. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Acuña has to prove it, right? Everybody has to prove it. Vientos has to prove it. Beatty has to prove it. Acuña. They all have to prove it. And if they don't, they're not going to be major leaguers. And it doesn't matter how talented they are. How many of these players, and we've talked about it with Beatty, you and I have talked about it privately, like, you know, Beatty could just end up being one of these guys who go to the talent graveyard, right? You know, all these talented guys with great swings and all this potential, and they just can't put it together here. And that's not to say that you would expect one of these four players to eventually put it together. And I'm rooting for all of them. And, you know, I do have an affinity, you know, just like Alex does, for Acuña. Like, I think he does have all of these skills that can make him, you know, he looks like a star at times, but he has to do it and prove it and prove they can continue to do it. That's what it's, I don't want to compare him to his brother, but his brother did that.
No. Right?
You know, his brother had all those tools, and he put it all together, and he's been able to do it for a long time. And that's, you know, will Acuña get that chance here? I mean, I don't know, but
yeah, you know, You know, Alexander, we definitely appreciate your call. I mean, like, would love for Acuña to become a star. I think the thing with him is, you know, he's really good at the things he's really good at, and that's, you know, running when he's on base and playing defense at multiple infield positions. The problem is just, you know, he has to be an elite average hitter to make up for all of his shortcomings, right? Like, I know he hit a couple home runs at the end of last season. They were huge, but looking at his minor league career, looking at what he has done in the major leagues this year, you could say that was a bit of an anomaly for mm-hmm. him. He's never been a power hitter. He's really mostly a ground ball hitter, and his problem in the minors has been a lot of what we've seen in the major leagues this year. You know, he's not finding the hole. He's pounding the ball into the dirt, and he's not getting on base that much, where his speed is not being properly utilized. You know, it's great to be a fast player, but if you can't actually get on base, it doesn't really matter. Look at Billy Hamilton. You know, that guy was one of the best base stealers we've ever seen. Guy couldn't hit, so he couldn't get on base, and he became a glorified pinch runner. I'm not saying that Acuña's career is just going to be that, but you know, it's a big reason why I think he's on, you know, the low ring of the totem pole here with these four guys, because I think he has the lowest floor. I mean, or at least the lowest ceiling. You know, I think you kind of know what you're going to get out of him, and it's not to say he can't get better, but I think the other guys all offer much more appealing attributes. They all have flashes of power. They can all do a little bit more than he can, where he really has to play kind of like perfect to be that kind of player.
Right. And he's Acuña. I just did the math. Since he got to the organization 2 years ago, you brought up the home runs. You can almost count on both hands how many home runs he's hit in 2 years at three levels of this organization. And again, like,
including the minor leagues.
Yeah, it's minors and majors. And it's again, like, it's not the be all and end all. But like you said, you know, he has to be able to do, you know, he has to be more than just a good base runner, more than just a good defensive player. And because, you know, you can find, you know, pinch runners anywhere, you know, so.
Right.
And it's not to say they have a lot of money, you know, they're not paying them, you know, it's not a money thing. It's just, you know, you can find those players anywhere and probably get, you know, just even, you know, a little bit higher floor and therefore get more value out of the roster spot. Again, like, you never know, like, he can figure it out tomorrow and he can transform himself. But, you know, is that going to happen? Like, I mean, I wouldn't put a whole lot of money on that, you know, just, I hate to say it, but we'll see.
Like, yeah. And I know it sounds like we're killing the kid, and we, you know, we definitely don't mean to, but it's just, you know, we're talking about four young infielders jockeying for the same couple of jobs. And, you know, Luis Angel Acuña, yeah, he's got like less opportunities than these guys, but remember, he did play quite a bit early on in the season. He's got the worst rated weighted runs created plus of all four of them by like quite a bit. His WRC plus is 69. The next worst is Vientos at 87. So he's still 20 points better than Acuña. Beatty's basically league average. Mauricio, in a very small samples, has been above average. So, you know, this stuff matters, and they're competing with each other. It's not Acuña and no other options. And I for a team that's trying to win a World Series, they can't afford to just throw a guy out there and hope that he eventually swims, because, you know, they maybe like some of his tools more than some of these other guys. Like, they got to win, and they got to win now, and they're not going to waste time. And Acuña didn't show himself to be that hitter in the opportunities he was given, and I don't think he's going to get another opportunity like that this year, unless something goes really wrong.
The good news for Acuña, though, is he's still so young, right? And there's plenty of time for them to develop him into hopefully that player that Alexander wants him to be, right? He's not there yet. It takes longer. You know, I think we often, you know, as outsiders, you know, get a little, we as soon as the player gets to the major leagues, you know, I can think of, I remember this with Ahmed Rosario. I remember this with Zach Wheeler too. you know, as soon as they're here, like, they need to perform and need to be stars. And it takes time. Like, look at how long it took Zach Wheeler to become the star that everybody wanted him to be 7 years before, right?
Yep.
And, like, that's it. Acuña may eventually be that kind of player. It's just not today.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, to your point, too, that was Wheeler's third organization, too. Sometimes guys put it together late, yeah. But like, this is a win now team. And again, we're not crushing him forever and not trying to say he can't be a good player at the major league level eventually. It's just like, to your point, it's just not now. And that's okay. They just need to find options that can help them win now, which is why he's probably going to wind up in AAA in the next 24 hours, I would have to guess. Since I got you, since we're doing this, and this probably will be our last live for a little bit. Moving forward now, this is the team, right? The bullpen is solidified. They add Soto, Rogers, and Helsley. They add Mullins to the offense. The starting pitchers are what they are, plus Sproat and McLean potentially at some point. What are your thoughts on the team moving forward for the rest of the year in these final 2 months? What are you feeling the most bullish about? And then what still concerns you the most?
You know, I mean, you and I talk a lot about the offense, and you know, I'm a believer in the ebbs and flows of the offense. I think you're a little bit more cynical than I am about it. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I guess, you know, this year at least, you know, you have a very strong case for that. But I mean, I do eventually believe, I mean, I have to believe that this 1-4 in the lineup is going to look like the 1-4 in the lineup they were before June 15th or whatever that date was, 38 games ago. Especially, you know, someone who you would think is going to be looking for a big contract in the offseason, Pete Alonso. You know, Juan Soto is, you know, a generational player, and, you know, players slump, and they just happen to be slumping all at the same time, and it's killing the offense. But I do eventually believe that they're going to hit. My biggest concern, as always, is the pitching and the starting rotation. And it's not to say that, like, if they had gotten one starter, all of their problems would have been solved. But they have problems. You know, I keep talking about, you know, Clay Holmes and being way, way past his innings threshold. You know, David Stearns was talking him up today, but he says, well, he's feeling great. He's physically healthy. He's fine. You know, he's strong, and, you know, we just got to work through this. But, you know, he's never had to do this before, and that's part of the adjustment that he has to make here. And, you know, it's a tough time to, you know, be patient with his situation, given that he may actually be tired, even though he's not presenting as such. And then there's the issues with Kodai Senga, and you never know if, you know, he's going to high five someone and get hurt, you know. Then there's Sean Manaea, who's they're still building him up and building, you know, trying to ramp him up, getting his stamina going. I said yesterday, he's not using all his pitches yet. And so that's a problem. And Frankie Montas is a Jekyll and Hyde kind of pitcher. And that's three starters of their five that, you know, are a little problematic, which you're going to either have to, you know, they're going to sink or swim with them. Right. And they're in a pennant race. I'm confident they're going to be in the playoffs. In what capacity? I don't know, whether it's as the winner of the division or the wild card. Like, I don't know, but, I think they're going to be in the postseason. And once they're there, I think they have the rotation pieces to go deep into October, especially with this bullpen. But the pitching is always going to be a bigger concern for me than the offense, because, like I said, I'm banking on that offense, you know, hitting at some point. I hope Mullins lengthens this lineup a bit and helps to get them going. It should. Again, league average production at a position they're getting well below league average production and coming in, you know, will be a benefit and not a detriment. So I do think he will help in that regard. But, you know, if they can't start to get length and quality length out of the starting rotation, you know, these three guys they got for the bullpen, it's not going to matter, because then they're just going to get overworked and overexposed and misused and so on and so forth. And, you know, there's going to be the next Jose Buto or the next Huascar Brazoban, where they're just going to give up crooked numbers all of a sudden. You know, we saw it with Reed Garrett in that horrible stretch in June, where he was just being used and used and used and used, and all of a sudden that slider stopped sliding, and he was getting crushed for like 3 weeks. And it's just going to, if they can't employ the formula with this rotation, then none of this stuff's going to matter. So that's my primary concern.
It's definitely going to be a big thing to watch. We got a couple of callers lined up. They're going to close us out. Doug, you are on with us. What's up, man?
Ah, there we go. What's all up, right, Doug? You guys. First time, long time here. So I just want to go back in the time machine a little bit. Glad you appreciate that. Just want to go back in the time machine a little bit, because 4 years ago, everyone was saying, hey, you got to make the move, right? So you got Javi. You gave a PCA. The PCA was injured at the time. People said, well, you know, that's what you need to do. And it just feels like Stearns has kind of flipped the script. And he even talked about it today at the presser, where he said, look, the credit today goes to player development and the international scouting team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all love prospects. But basically, Stearns said, I'm willing to deal prospects as long as they're not in the top 10 for the most part. And, you know, I'm still trying, like, you know, I don't live and breathe this stuff in the way they do. I'm trying to figure out how they kind of have changed the way they've scouted. And obviously the money helps. Cohen's money helps in a big way. But, you know, what, you know, this is going to make the organization elite, is having that deep farm. Mm-hmm. And how do we make it deeper, right, so that we can trade prospects without giving away the farm, you know, if not every year, a lot of years. And, you know, this just feels different. We've never been able to, like, trade for good guys and not give away our top prospects. And I'd like to think that continues. And I'd just love to hear more from both of you just on how this is, like, the unsexy stuff, but it made the day here. And
yeah.
I'd love to hear more from both of you on it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great point, Doug, and thank you for calling. I think, like, you kind of hinted at it, but this is the kind of, like, less seen side of and benefit of Steve Cohen's money. It's not just the Juan Soto moves or the big spending sprees for Scherzer and all those guys from 2022. It's also investing in the analytics department, reinvesting in their scouting, expanding these departments, and having, you know, so many more staff members who can go around the country, review this stuff, review it in different ways with so much more data than they ever have before. I think that is a huge part of it. And we're already seeing that happen. I don't even think they're done yet, because remember that we're in year two of the Stearns era. So they're still, you know, revamping things as we go along, but they're already starting to do that. It's why, you know, every year you see the Yankees make trades and you're like, how the fuck did they get this player and they gave up a bunch of, like, 17, 18th ranked prospects? The Padres just seemingly never run out of prospects. The Dodgers often do this. It's because they build these farm systems up, right, where they're graduating, for the most part, the top prospects, but they're so deep that they can get major league ready talent when they need at the deadline for these guys ranked in, like, the 10 to 15 or 15 to 20 range. And that's what the Mets are in progress to doing. And they've made a lot of progress there. And I think there's still room to go, but it really has made a huge impact. And it's why, you know, yeah, maybe the Mets gave up some names that you were familiar with, some guys that you might've thought were a little bit more highly ranked than they were this past week. But, you know, it's why they don't have to give up, like, a PCA type of prospect for rental players anymore, because they've deepened this farm system in so many ways.
Yeah, and I agree with all that. And I think on top of that, they've made financial investments in technology. They've made financial investments into the players and created and done a better job at creating those internal relationships, you know, all the way down at, you know, in St. Lucie on those backfields, you know, in the heat of the summer in June, where they're instructing and teaching. They've changed their approach and modernized their approach with player development and player relationships to try and get what they expect out of them. Right before, you know, I think the Mets would have, you know, pretty good drafts, but they never really had a way of, or a good way, or a modern way of developing those players and either getting quality players to the major leagues, you know, when they're ready and capable of producing, or developing prospects that can be traded and used by other organizations. And now I think they've been able to put all of that together, and that's the secret sauce that nobody knows or nobody has access to, because if they did, then everybody you know, they're not going to let those company secrets get out. But I think that has a lot to do with it, you know, based on, you know, some of the things, you know, I've seen, you know, when I've gone down to those facilities, you know, gone to those, you know, you and I have done it over the years, where we go to those minor league facilities and we see exactly what's going on. We saw it, you know, years ago when, you know, the Mets were, you know, dinosaurs, you know, and I know they were at that time when we first, you know, we traveled out to Binghamton, and, you know, when I would go down to St. Lucie, you know, it was a totally different world than it is today. And I think that has a lot to do with it, just from a modernization perspective. They've modernized their practices. And I think that's, you know, that's the key to the question that you're asking, where, you know, before they couldn't do this. It's not like their drafts would be any different. You know, they brought in the same number of players every year, but they, you know, it was just like they got their hand and didn't know how to play it. And I think they know how to play it now, you know?
Yeah, that is where the sustained part of sustained success comes in, you know, where Mets have obviously had a lot of great years, even when they had the Wilpons owning them, you know, 2006, 2015, the ones that stand out the most, of course. But, you know, under Steve Cohen, you know, the Mets are on track right now to make the playoffs for the third time in, what, 4 years? They don't have that many stretches like that. That's how you start to get on this track of, like, you want to be in the dance every year, and you're not always going to get there and you're not always going to win, but, you know, it gives you the more opportunities you have, the better chance, obviously, you're going to have it at winning a title. And that's a big deal. And the Mets are on their way to a level of sustained success that I know I've never seen. And I don't think
nobody's seen any it. They've never done this
ever
before.
Seen. So in a way, it's, you know, it is really unprecedented. I want to get to our last caller. Jonathan, you are up with us. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys? How are you tonight, this evening?
Very good.
I see a bunch of guys who come on my spaces also are down here. I see Paul, I see Alexander and everybody. But I'll get to my point here. A week ago, we got much better than what we are right now, a week ago. We got Gregory Soto, we got Husley, we got Tyrone, we got, you know, all these guys, Mullins, and the guys in the bullpen. It's a complete overhaul on the bullpen. And I honestly didn't really want Cedric Mullins. I wanted somebody a little bit, you know, more better bat, a more proven bat, someone with a little more power, and preferably a right-handed bat, because we're left-handed dominant over here. But at the end of the day, what I see from David Stearns is that he went all in, and that's all we can ask for this team. Being a lifelong Mets fan and going through the Wolpon era and all that stuff, and now going through the Cohen era, I have so much optimism for this team. And this team looks really, really good on paper. The only thing is, we got to just snap out of it. Lindor needs to snap out of it.
Yep.
All of our guys, if they play to the back of their baseball cards, we're going to be fine. We're going to be really, really good and dangerous. It's great. It's awesome. And one of my dreams is, because I'm a police officer for over 19 years. I got one more year left with the NYPD. I want to walk down the Canyon of Heroes with my uniform on. That's what I want to do. That's one of my dreams I always wanted to do. So I'm waiting for that day, and I hope it's going to be this year. That's what I got to say about that. But you guys are doing a great job. Love your show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, man. We definitely appreciate it. And I think you bring up a lot of good points there. And the best one being, you know, I don't want to hear people say David Stearns is a small market GM anymore. You know, he didn't blow up the farm system or anything to get a big name, but, you know, Jonathan made a great point. You know, he did go all in. Like, they were aggressive. This is not a level of aggression we've seen from the Mets at the trade deadline in probably a decade. And while they didn't get this big, big star, you know, they went in pretty hard, and I applaud Stearns for being aggressive and doing something, you know, we haven't seen him do. And most of that's because he didn't really have the opportunity. And last year was, the Mets were kind of more in the middle. I don't think they wanted to necessarily cash their chips in so fast. You can agree or disagree with that, but I think that that was the philosophy. So, you know, we've seen it now. We've seen Stearns go out and get a bunch of back-end relievers, upgrade the offense. Obviously, the signings that they made over the offseason, you know, the guy's not afraid to run a team in New York. And I think people who are still clinging on to that were always misguided, but this should be the number one example and reminder of, like, no, this guy, like, knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, look, I agree. And I think he played it smartly. He played it as well as he could this week. You know, he didn't do anything stupid. He didn't do anything rash. You know, he knew he had a good team coming in and just needed a couple of these parts. And, you know, he didn't act desperate, right? And a lot of GMs, you know, often go into this acting desperate and trying to play multiple hands, and they end up, you know, often winning the trade deadline and, you know, not getting to the playoffs a lot, you know. So, and I'm not necessarily referring to the San Diego Padres, but I feel like some of the moves that they made today, you know, were just, you know, it's almost like they're just like throwing darts at the wall, you know. And they made there's so much roster turnover. Like, now it all has to glue together, right? You know, and Stearns didn't do that. Like, he just filled the holes, right? And mm-hmm. they may be temporary. They may just be rentals and none of them come back. But I feel like it was a very thoughtful and strategic path forward. Whereas in the past, you know, I take Sandy Alderson out of it. And, you know, even mm-hmm. with Omar, who, you know, I thought he's a brilliant baseball mind even today. And sometimes, you know, he was in that, you know, he was that AJ, in that AJ Preller ilk where, you know, he's just like, just getting everybody and not caring about like what he's giving
throwing
up, you know,
and throwing vesting options in every contract he could.
Right. Right. And so, like, you know, and that's the thoughtfulness, which, you know, really, you know, they haven't had, you know. And again, like, I'm not like, I don't want to, Sandy Alderson is very thoughtful in all the moves he made. I mean, he always was the smartest guy, you know, in the room. But, you know, I agree. Like, why, if you're not optimistic about, you know, this ownership group and front office, like, when are you going to be optimistic? Like, now's the time. So,
mm-hmm. By the way, we do have one last caller, but before we get to them, the Braves, who again did not sell today, blew an 8-run eighth inning lead just now against the Reds. So have fun over there, you fuckers. Lil Sweetlin, you are our last caller of the night. What is up?
Good evening, fellas. How are you?
Good. Hello. How are you doing?
Hello. How are you?
Good. Good. Thank you. Hi. I just came in to offer my two cents on the trade deadline. This is uncharted territory for us Mets fans to have even the slightest bit of activity during the trade deadline.
It's been a while, you know,
during the Wilpon years. I feel like they did address big time the bullpen, which is great. Mm-hmm. But I still have my reservations about the starting staff, especially where a guy like Clay Holmes is concerned. You know, it seems like he tops out at five innings, if not earlier. I was hoping that they would get a competent starter, you know, but I guess nobody was available. Cedric Mullins, I don't know much about the player, but you know, pickings were slim there too. You know, it was clearly a pitcher's deadline, you know.
Yeah, and but, especially with the relievers.
Right, right. But really, it's just a matter of the big four at the top of the lineup, coming out of their amazing collective slump. It's just strange that they're all slumping at the same time.
I mean, they will take this team as far as they can go, or they will
exactly
be that they lose. You know, it's
as really those four go, so this team goes. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yep.
But you know what it is? Especially comparing to last season, where it was just such a fun ride, and the team was considered such a lovable underdog. You know, with the new ownership trying to get out from under the LOL Mets moniker, it just like I said, last year was fun due to the gimmicks of Grimace and, you know, OMG. This season feels like, you know, this team is not the lovable losers anymore, and they're not, you know, the underdog Mets. Now it seems like these moves are, like you said, well thought out, intentioned, strategic, and you know, regardless of what happens in the playoffs, do I think they'll make the playoffs? Yes. I'm not sure they'll make it as far as they did last season, but you finally see a roadmap for where this management wants to take the team. I just hope, no matter what happens, that, you know, Stearns, you know, I'm not a fan of Stearns. I appreciate the job that he's done. He is such a politician when he speaks. He's not giving you anything. My hope is just that, you know, well, it's good to think that you're the smartest guy in the room at times, you know. You kind of just want to, you as a fan, you want to see the guy, the whoever's heading your organization, go for the more sure thing in terms of pitching or hitting, what have you. We know Stearns' MO where pitching is concerned. He doesn't like giving long-term pitching contracts, but I just feel like this is a long-winded way of saying, you know, this team needs an impact bat, just a professional hitter, you know, that is able to get on base, and not only get on base, but drive runners in when they're in scoring position. You know, I've been saying it for 4 years now. The bane of my fandom with this team is their inability to come through with runners in scoring position, much less with the bases loaded. You know, so yeah. I'm just hoping for that day that, you know, this team will be complete in terms of getting the right guys in here and to play a solid brand of baseball fundamentally, as well as, you know, honing guy skills as you know, sluggers.
Totally. And thank you so much for the call in. No, definitely said a lot there. And I mean, I've been yelling about the offense all year, but, you know, it is an oversimplification, but you know, as you said, it's up to those four guys, right? And they're all in one huge slump right now. And you got to hope that they get out of it. But, you know, I don't mind the, like, David Stearns politician act, just when I remind myself that he's not going to say anything anyways. Most GMs are like that. And I think the good ones really don't say anything, because, you know, if that posturing, if that, like, not saying anything in public thing actually helps 1% with leverage in any kind of negotiations, because he didn't tip his hand, I'm fine with it. It doesn't really bother me. I don't. Most of the time, you're not going to get a lot out of those interviews with those guys, and I think I've just kind of like accepted that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's informational when he speaks, right? And you don't necessarily know what's true and what's not, what's, you know, like you said, posturing or, you know, what have you. And it's, he cannot, it's his job. And I appreciate, you know, that, you know, you want, we all want, you know, people to show some emotion and show some, you know, it's like a passion. Like you want him to be passionate about the roster he's building and passionate about winning. But for GMs, and I truly believe this, winning meets the requirement. It's the losing that causes them to act, right? If they win, that means they check the box. That's how a business, that's how a GM in sports responds to the results. So mm-hmm. It's true. Like they don't view winning as anything great. They just merely met the requirement, right? So, and the reason why he made the trades he made was because they weren't winning due to the issues that he ultimately at least attempted to resolve this week. So, you know, I think he did show a lot of emotion and compassion in the playoffs last year, especially as they won those series and, you know, got deeper and deeper and was getting champagne poured on his head. You know, he cracked a genuine smile, I think, you know, during mm-hmm. at that time. So, and look, he's you know, he grew up a Met fan, and so did his boss, and like, you know, he cares. Right? I mean, I think he probably cares more than some of his predecessors might have, you know, in the ways that you're asking him to care, but he can't show it, right? That's just part of the poker game he's playing 365 days a year. So I appreciate that. He's definitely more composed than any of us, and you know, I think it's working. I hope it's working, but we'll know it worked when they win a World Series.
The arrow's pointing in the right direction here. He made the NLCS in his first year. They're one of the better teams record-wise this year. They're going for it. So far, so good. And at the end of the day, it's the results tell the story. Mike, thank you for joining us. To everybody listening who joined each of these last two nights, we appreciate you. If you're listening on the podcast feed in the morning, we appreciate you guys as well. That's going to do it for us. We are finally going to take our long rest after this trade deadline season. Please follow the newsletter over on justmets.net. It's free every single morning. If you want to upgrade your membership, you'll get access to paywalled articles and our podcast that comes out every single Monday morning. Got a new episode coming out this week, so you're not going to want to miss that. We'll continue to kind of digest what happened at the trade deadline with a special guest and talk about whatever the Mets do over the weekend against the Giants. So thank you, everybody, so much. Have a good night, and let's go Mets.
Thanks for listening to this free preview of the Just Mets podcast. If you liked what you heard and want access to full weekly episodes and additional bonus content, you can become a supporter of Just Mets on patreon.com/justmets or on justmets.net.